collection, and you can read it any place. Go to play 60.
It requires no batteries whatsoever.
No batteries whatsoever. No cords, no nothing. Just carry it around with you.
877 is the toll-free number, 500-KABU, 877-500-5266. And that's you right now, and back to KBOO programming.
What would you have instead?
So Melody is an instrument?
What would you have instead?
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KABU would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Hoda Middle Eastern Cuisine, located at 3401 Southeast Belmont, serving Lebanese cuisine using ingredients from local farms. Dinner was provided by De Nicholas's Italian Restaurant, located at 3520 Southeast Powell, family-owned and serving Italian cuisine.
And you do have it tuned to KBOO Portland. It is 9 a.m. It is 45 seconds past 9 a.m. Coming up, Lisa Loving hosts a new show called Democracy in Motion. Her guest is Steve Frazier, author of The Age of Acquiescence, The Life and Death of American Resistance to Organized Wealth and Power. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features highlights from the recent symposium on the dynamics of possible nuclear extinction. We'll hear speakers Noam Chomsky and Robert Perry. And then you'll want to stay tuned at 11 for The Digital Divide. Host Rabia Yemin interviews journalist Robert Scheer, Truthdig, editor-in-chief, about his latest book, They Know Everything About You, How Data Collecting Corporations and Snooping Government Agencies Are Destroying Democracy.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Lessons from the Community Rights Movement. Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel in the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Paul Cienfuegos is presenting this original speech and will lead a community conversation about the community rights movement and how civic engagement can lead to reclaiming the structures of law. Again, that's Paul Cienfuegos with We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 9:03, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa Loving, and this is Democracy in Motion, tamping down the cynicism and ramping up the activism. This is our debut show! So we're thrilled to welcome labor historian Steve Frazier. His newest book, The Life and Death of Organized Resistance to Wealth and Power, it's a sweeping political history of the Golden Age, and he makes the case for why this right now is a golden age, right? And it looks like we're working to get him on the phone. Right on. Hey, Stephen, are you there?
I am.
Hey, welcome to KABU. It's so exciting to hear from you today.
Thank you. Thanks very much for inviting me on.
And Steve, this is a big deal because this is the first. This is a debut show at KBOO. This is the first time we've started a show like this. The goal of Democracy in Motion is to look at electoral politics and the range of grassroots community activism and try to encourage people to plug in and make a change in their communities and in the world. And that's why The Age of Acquiescence, your new book, is. This is the first show because this book, this is what I'm saying. This book, it's with a focus on people power and what's happened to people power. I would put this book on the shelf next to Dee Brown's Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. I'd put it next to Iris Chang's Narrative History of the Chinese in America and News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media by Juan Gonzalez and Joseph Torres. It's a reference book for this new show and a starting point for anyone's understanding of how our political movements became the sort of snarl that they are today. And Stephen, I love this book. And it, like I said, I see it as a reference book, but I want to do this interview a little bit backwards. Okay. Instead of jumping into the heart of your writing, first, I want to ask you, what's the most concrete way you hope people will use this book?
Well, first, let me thank you for all your kind words about the book, and it's an honor to be a guest on the debut of your show. at the risk of being immodest, I think what I would say is that I hope they will use it in a strange way as a kind of inspiration. I say strange way because the age of acquiescence that I argue we have been living through, say, since the Reagan era, right, more or less up to the present, contrasts very sharply with an earlier period of American life during the first Gilded Age. You know, it's customary nowadays to refer to our moment as the second Gilded Age. And my book begins, and the first half of my book is about the enormous resistance to organized power and wealth during the first Gilded Age, when there were multi-dimensional movements like the populist movement and the Knights of Labor and socialism and anarchism and organized labor. There were strikes, a rolling series of mass strikes that were characteristic of the country for 30 or 40 years. Our culture was deeply informed by a kind of critique of capitalism. And I'm talking not merely a kind of intellectual critique, but it informed our poetry, our novels, even the early instances of the cinema in the early 20th century. There was a language of anti-capitalism that was spoken widely by preachers, by politicians, by journalists. So there was a kind of what you might call an age of resistance. And when I say that I hope my book will be inspirational, what I mean is that I hope that reading about that period and understanding why people were capable under very trying circumstances of mounting such concerted resistance of various kinds, we might use that as a kind of example of what we need much more of today and that we have lacked largely, not entirely obviously, but largely lacked for the last 30 or 40 years, at least by comparison. So if my book can inspire that kind of hope by making the past usable, I guess is what I might say, making our American past usable today.
You know, and I have to say, in a couple minutes, we're going to talk about a specific kind of activism that people can engage in to support this kind of programming in this radio station. But Steve, you don't know this, but actually President Obama is in Portland today.
Oh, uh-huh.
Right. And he is at the Nike headquarters, where Nike today announced that, or maybe that is yesterday, they announced that they're cutting ties with 100 factories in other parts of the world. Out of, I want to say, 700, 800 in total they work with. And they are, Nike says that they're committed to bringing 10,000 new jobs to Oregon specifically. I think they're saying Oregon specifically. And a lot of people are going out there to Nike to protest the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I'm not going to be able to have you comment on this for now. We're going to comment on this in a few minutes because this is our fabulous party of investment here at the KBOO Community Radio Station. But I want to leave people with this thought. Why is that? What's going on there? Is it a good thing that Nike's doing that? Or why are people protesting out there? And what is the, you know, what is the nature of the protest, and why aren't we all out there? But before I do that, one of my dearest friends, okay, dearest oldest friends. I'm not saying he's old. I'm not saying I'm old. But Justin, we're joined.
He's dear.
He is dear, and longest timest friends. We're joined by Justin, and we're going to give people. We want you guys to get involved in supporting this station because you know we always see KBOO as the antidote to cynicism. And Justin, you know what? So this year. This is my 25th anniversary as a KBOO volunteer.
Isn't that magnificent?
It is.
And everyone in Radio Land is grateful for that, Lisa, because
Thank you.
You've been bringing so much to the community. KBOO has been essentially these 47 years have been an age of resistance where we restore the people back to the people's own airwaves. We call it radio activism, and I can't think of a more tireless champion than you, Lisa. And that's why we're hoping the people who are listening right now are going to pick up their phone and just put a little in the kitty. You can call toll free 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO to show your support for Lisa Loving in this her inaugural episode of Democracy in Motion. My program title suggestion was Nick's. That was Democracy in Motrin, and the motto was going to be No Pain, No Pain. But Lisa's smarter than me, and you all know that because you've been listening to her. You can do that securely online at kboo.fm, and I would like to welcome the newest KBOO member on board right now. That's Allison in Sandy. She's a new member and the newest member of the KBOO fold, and she's showing the way to so many other people who are out there listening right now, because you're not alone in this age of resistance. Every time you tune into this radio station, you tune into Lisa's dulcet tones and all of our other political and cultural and entertainment ambassadors, you're getting linked together with thousands upon thousands of people in Portland, in the metro area, in the state, in the nation, and indeed around the world through KBOO.fm. And we're so grateful. We hope you'll take a little part and engage in that resistance. 877-500-5266.
Not only that, for only a $60 minimum pledge for an entire year, you get a copy of this amazing book, The Age of Acquiescence, The Life and Death of American Resistance to Organized Wealth and Power. And what I really love about this book, I'm just going to put this out now. I've spent a few years now digging out my ancestry on deadancestors.com, right? Don't ask me where that money goes.
Do they have liveancestors.com?
Yeah, anyway. And one of the things that I've wished is that there was a history book that was a sweeping history of real people. Now, I know that Howard Zinn did the People's History, but this book, The Age of Acquiescence, it's a labor history, but it's a political history. And I felt that it really informed some of the stories of my own ancestors that I wished I could read. This is the book that I wish had come out a long time ago. And I don't say that lightly, listeners. I really recommend this book. $5 per month. That's less than a half rack of PBR. I mean, you can afford this. And the book itself is worth almost $30. So you give us a call at 877-500-5266. You give us a gift, we give you a gift, and then we shake hands and we're part of a community, and that's how it works. Okay? We're ready to come back to the interview. Thank you, Justin. And thanks for everyone who's going to be calling, because I know that you are going to be calling. We are live on the line with Steve Frazier. Like I said, his book is The Age of Acquiescence. I just brought this up about Nike. Now, Steve, so, okay, I feel like this is kind of what your book is about. We have these apparently do-gooders at Nike, apparently. Okay, we have this apparently a do-gooder Democratic president, Barack Obama, who actually does seem like a pretty nice guy. And we all know that the Trans-Pacific Partnership we don't all know, but a lot of us speculate that it's like NAFTA on steroids, right? I've read a lot of analysis about this. But Steve, why isn't it good that Nike's taking these steps? Why should we distrust what Barack Obama's doing over there in Beaverton today?
Well, those are two separate questions. I think what Nike did is good. I mean, right, you know, I mean, creating jobs for people in America and so on. The question for me is, why is Nike doing it? And I should probably note that Nike is a little unusual in the wider world of apparel manufacturing, which is a world of sweatshop labor every place. And Nike has done some of that itself, but it's usually been better. But why is this happening? The reason it's happening is not because it's because protest about substandard wages, dangerous working conditions. All I have to do is mention Bangladesh and the horrific fire that happened there just a short while ago. All over the world, American companies locating in their with their subcontractors in Central America, in Latin America, in Asia, producing goods for the American market. That make the sweatshop a kind of universal phenomenon. A protest movement has developed over the last, I don't know, half dozen years, more than that, really, which has taken many forms, workers organizing, students on campus trying to get their campuses to boycott goods or at least to monitor the production of goods so that good, decent wages and working conditions prevail in these kinds of sweatshops. None of this, this Nike thing or, you know, even, you know, Walmart's kind of grudging announcement that they're going to raise the wages of some of their workers or any of this, and the fact that now we're beginning to get municipal minimum wage laws and even living wage ordinances that are much better, obviously, than minimum wages. Minimum wages are so pathetically low that you can't, as a family, survive in them. None of this would have happened. It never would have happened out of the goodwill of Nike, any other corporation, or Barack Obama without this kind of drumbeat of protest, legislative action, and so on. And Obama's a good case. Sure, he's a nice guy. Who could not like, in a way, as a person, Obama? He's genial, he's intelligent, blah, blah. But the point is that, in the end, he has represented consistently the interests of powerful financial and corporate interests from the day he was elected. He filled his administration with people like Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and the whole Wall Street, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs crowd. He's in with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It is going to be like NAFTA on steroids. It's going to obliterate all who knows how many hundreds of thousands or millions of American jobs, but it will benefit the great multinational corporations. And I think that one of the problems in the age of acquiescence, our own age, is that we have become too gullible for, you know, kind of a personable, genial guy who says, yes, we can, whatever that's supposed to mean. And then it turns out, well, no, we can't when it comes to actually equalizing power and wealth relations in the country. I don't blame this on Obama personally. It's just that we need to build the kind of outside movements that led, forced Nike to do this, or that has led other corporations of late to begin to raise their... None of this would have happened without the kind of outside pressure that used to be common during the first Gilded Age, during what I called the Age of Resistance back in the 19th century.
Mm. And we're live on the phone with Steve Frazier talking about his newest book, The Age of Acquiescence. When we're talking about the Age of Acquiescence, okay, what we mean is that during the first Gilded Age, 100 years ago and more, when we had robber barons literally basically taking down big parts of the world, we still do, there were a lot of people who became very active all over the world to make that stop. This, Steve, this is the age of acquiescence because the Gilded Age is back, but we're all watching TV. Basically.
Exactly. We're watching TV, or some of us, millions of us, fell in love with, especially in the 1980s and 90s, with the kind of Wall Street businessman hero. They became our gurus, our savants. They were brave. They were risk takers. They were charting new paths of, to develop. When in fact they were stripping the economy bare, they were turning it into a kind of casino while industry rotted away. But our mass media idolized these people. You know, they were kind of Napoleons of finance or whatever, conquistadors, you know, great heroes. We kind of fell in love with that, or we became lost in our own private forms of emancipation, you know, the right, whatever that is, you know, the T-shirt with the right logo on it makes you feel like you're, you know, I don't know what, either you're free, you're a superhero, you're something. You know, we kind of gave in. And of course, the most valuable thing we lost, and which made the Age of Acquiescence possible, was vital movements, especially the labor movement. The labor movement, in all of its forms, is what made Fight Back possible for a long period of time, beginning, say, during the Great Depression of the 30s and the New Deal. The New Deal never would have happened had there not been insurgent labor action all over the country, general strikes, sit-down strikes where factories were actually occupied, farmer labor parties springing up all over the country, rent strikes, the seizing of shut coal mines, opening up public utility, you know, violating private property. People had both the desperation and the audacity to do that, and then you get finally a kind of set of New Deal reforms which civilized the economy.
Steve, I have to jump in really quick there. No, this is what I love about KBOO is that we can have deep substantive discussions like this. And this is like, Steve, this is like if we were at my house sitting around the table at midnight drinking coffee. And, so right now we're here at KBOO. This is our glorious spring membership drive. My friend Justin and I both, we want to convince you listeners, if you've never joined before, give us a call, 877-500-5266. You may feel as if you've heard it before about the labor movement, but I'm telling you that Steve's book, The Age of Acquiescence, there's so much history in here. It's a reference book. We will not be able to cover it in the entire hour, but you can get a copy of it for a $60 annual pledge, $5 a month, 877-500-5266. What about you, Justin?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Lisa, and you took the words right out of my mouth, because this is a really important book and we want to put it into the hands of our listeners. We also have a program goal for your inaugural episode of Democracy in Motion, and that's $500. And so what I was thinking is that maybe five of you could give that $100. That's $825 a month when you start that monthly ongoing giving, a sustaining membership. And we could send you a copy of The Age of Acquiescence. But then I thought to myself, this is such an important piece of work, and what you're doing right now is so important, Lisa, that maybe to get that $500, we could have four or five people do $120 a year. That would be a modest $10 a month when they start their automatic giving. It's very secure and simple. And then we could send you two copies, because then you listeners get to have that joy of giving such important information. You get one for yourself and one for a colleague or a companion or a friend or a neighbor.
It's kind of be Mother's
That's
Day.
That's right. It could
Mother's
be like
Mother's Day was a peace holiday. It's
well,
not a Hallmark holiday.
Right, and you can avoid the Freudian slips where you say one thing and mean a mother. But actually, we're asking you to call right now, 877-500-5266, because that's the only way we've been able to do this for 47 years, to keep the lights on and the transmitter working for Lisa and her guests and for all of our programmers who come in here. Think of how many times you've heard something that really moved you or really entertained you or incited you or pleased you, and then put a small price on that, because of course you give for your reasons, not for ours. But Lisa Loving and so many programmers have given so much every hour of every day, and I think we decided it's over 23 million commercial free minutes, and we think that's worth your support. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
You know, I love it when people come in person. I know it's nutty to love the membership drive, but I love it because we all get to be here in this building. We're at 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon. Doors open. Come over. The bagel vault's out there. There's coffee on the burner. There's wonderful people that you're going to meet that do all sorts of things. Our KBOO volunteers who come here and answer the phones, and all of us who do this programming, we're so different. We come from so many different places. And when you come to the membership drive, you come here in person with your pocket full of money. Like I said, 20 Southeast 8th in Portland. You just get to meet all these people. You see who and what we really are. And I have to say this too, Justin, I actually just galvanized myself and put the money down and got that hoodie. The KBOO hoodie for $120. That's $10 a month.
I think actually that might be a little more than that, but I'll double check on that, Lisa. It's a prized item, but when you call 877-500-KBOO, they'll get that squared away for you.
It's $220. It's $250. How much is it?
I'll double check.
$240. That's right. It's like a double.
So $20 a month.
I took some money from one thing. I took some money from something else. I brought it in this building in cash, and I handed it to Sun Lee, and he gave me a hug.
But you've also brought a lot, Lisa, and I wanted to go back to something. It's really great during Membership Drive because we get to directly interface with the people that are being served by this vital community organization. And when you come in, you get this supercharged dose of what it's like when you're listening, because sometimes you tune into KBOO because you think you might be the only one who's thinking about some of these issues. I mean, because you look around, you don't see it on the billboards, you don't see it on the commercials, and you don't see it coming from the shrieking heads out of faux news and MSNBC. And then you tune in here and you're instantly linked up with so many different people, and you realize, wow, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who's frustrated. I'm not the only one who wants to take back rights, interrupt oppression. And that's what you tune into KBOO for. You tune into people like Lisa who are doing that research, and people all over the world are tuning in, and they're coming in and they're getting involved. And we're asking you right now, dear listeners, take just a moment out of your busy day and make a small contribution to the joint project. It doesn't go away. It stands here as a monument at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and you can do that online at kboo.fm. That's secure at our website, kboo.fm, or you can call us toll-free from anywhere in North America. That's 877-500-KBOO.
You can't see me, but I'm fist pumping right now. Thanks to all the people who are calling 877-500-5266. Love the people who come in person. If you come in person to 20 Southeast 8th here in Portland, you can drop some money on the table, and then you can actually find out when the volunteer orientation is. It's 1 hour volunteer orientation. It's held once a month. And then you can look at all the different kinds of training for radio activism that we have here. We give training for free in how to be a radio journalist, how to be a music mixer, all these different things. That's what your money pays for at KBOO, okay? So 877-500-5266. Give us a call online. Go to our website, kboo.fm, or come in person to 20 Southeast 8th. And it's our Glorious Spring Membership Drive, and we're back with Steve Frazier. Steve Frazier, I am so excited that you're here, because again, this book, I love books. I kind of eat books, you know. They have a flavor. I love books. A lot of people are reading things digitally anymore, but you can't take a computer into the bathtub anymore. And what I love about books like this is that this is the kind of book that you can read for years. This is the kind of book that you refer to back and forth. And so I want to jump in now and say, Steve Frazier, how is this the new Gilded Age? When I was looking at deadancestors.com and I'm learning who my great grandfathers and grandmothers are, I saw some of my father's family worked in lead mines in Missouri, right? I was looking at that. Well, who owned those mines? I could see how my ancestors were impacted by these gigantic, I don't know, corporate forces that emerged out of nowhere, and who did anything about it at the time. So, well, how is this the new Gilded Age? And can you explain what Karl Marx meant when he said, all that is solid melts into air?
Okay, I'll do my best. I think most of us are used to thinking of the two Gilded Ages, back then and now, as quite similar. And they were similar in certain essential ways. There was this enormous maldistribution of income and wealth. There was what today we call crony capitalism, meaning that businessmen and politicians kind of were engaged in incestuous relationships that undermined democracy and gave power and made democracy sellable. It was an age during which, back then, there was a kind of Darwinian justification for this great inequality. Today we call it meritocracy. And, of course, both Gilded Ages became famous for their ostentatious displays of wealth by by the what today we call the 1%. But what's interesting is what's new about our Gilded Age, why it's different. One basic difference we've talked about, that is to say, that first Gilded Age was an age of resistance. Our second one has been largely an age of acquiescence. But there are other ways. Interestingly enough, despite the hardships that your ancestors faced in those lead mines, which typified the lives of millions of immigrant workers from all around the world who came to America, the general standard of living, despite all the oppressions and exploitation, slowly increased over the course of the long 19th century because the country was industrializing. And the Gilded Age was known for the industrial explosion of America. The second Gilded Age is known for exactly the opposite. We fancy ourselves a prosperous and affluent society, but actually for the last 40 or 50 years, we are a developed country undergoing underdevelopment. We have deindustrialized, and the standard of living for most working Americans, not for the 1% or maybe the 10% above them, I mean below them, but for many working Americans, the standard of living has declined slowly or stagnated or declined. All our social services have become neglected and are threadbare remnants of what they used to be. An example of that is that back in 1950, a family in which there was one wage earner earned the same amount in real terms that is now it now takes two wage earners to earn for a normal family. All the kinds of things we used to take for granted, pensions, sick days, vacations, health care, were gradually whittled away during the course of the second Gilded Age. So they're very different in that way. And, of course, also what is most fundamentally different, what makes ours new and unlike the old one, is back then there was a vibrant culture of anti-capitalism, which gave people the energy and the imagination and the courage to say, we don't have to live this way. This is not the way our ancestors lived, and capitalism is not our fate. It's not like, you know, inscribed in the stars that we must live in this way. But in our second Gilded Age, we not only have come to accept that as our fate, that it's the only way to organize society, but we have celebrated those who we used to indict for running society, and in the case of the great financial crisis of a few years ago, running it into the ground. So our Gilded Age today is new in those ways, which is a challenge to us. We have to address that.
Steve, hold that thought. I have to say that NAYA, right, the Native American Youth Association, has something that has happened at the school board meeting this week, and I have to discuss it really quickly right now because this goes to what you're talking about, okay? Portland School Board fails Native youth. So in a decision that could potentially unravel 3 years of partnership and planning, Portland Public Schools Board of Directors failed to advance, I think it was on Tuesday night, a critical intervention in the lives of Native American youth at Tuesday's board meeting. A resolution to enable the Generations Project to continue failed to garner 4 board directors' votes. More than 50 NAYA supporters packed the meeting room, and the community's disappointment was deep. The PPS's strategic plan states plainly that the district has an obligation to invest in underperforming and historically disadvantaged populations, and Portland's Native students are perpetually underserved, with a 47% graduation rate and extremely high rates of discipline and expulsion. In failing to support Generations, it's an education and affordable housing complex that is set to be built, and the school district was supposed to share part of the cost in the startup, right? And so this unraveled just spontaneously after several years worth of effort. And listeners, the NAYA would like for people who are motivated to call up the Portland Public Schools District office and tell them what you think about this decision. So I just had to jump in really quick, real life, and say, for our colleagues at NAYA, that this is something that's happening right now, and this is something that people can do right now. And but Steve,
well, you know, I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
now back to you, man. I just had to just fold in a little reality.
Well, I think it's a great example of what I would call the kind of double counter-revolution that's happened over the last 30 or 40 years. It's both a revolution against the New Deal reforms of the 1930s, against the welfare state, against regulating business, against the rights of labor, and a second counter-revolution against the 60s and what happened after the 60s, which, that is to say, the recognition of the human rights of all kinds of oppressed minorities. First of all, of course, African Americans, but all other kinds of discriminated against groups. Over the last 30 or 40 years, there's been a kind of counter-revolution against both of those great reform moments in American history, the 30s and 60s, and this is a kind of micro example of that.
Let me put it to you even another way. I mean, because we're talking about why the age of acquiescence, why people don't agitate for social change the way they should or the way they used to, the last time people got basically bulldozed under, because we're seeing people who are getting shot in the street, you know, all over the United States. But why is it, and I feel like your book goes to the heart of this, why is it that these school board members, and this one, there's two particular school board members who are probably Democrats, right? But this is a nonpartisan electoral thing. Why don't the Democrats do what leftists, why do we have our faith in Democrats that then turn around and say, I don't know about funding this Native American support program? Native Americans, in my opinion, being the most oppressed group here in our region.
Well, I think one thing that happened during the age of acquiescence is that the Democratic Party lost its soul, if one can use that kind of term to describe a political party. That is to say, the populism, the sort of, pardon the expression, class consciousness that once informed the Democratic Party, say during the era of the New Deal, was undermined, especially as the economy began to turn south in the 1970s. And the Democratic Party abandoned the labor movement, for example. I mean, it used it as a kind of money-raising vehicle and all that kind of thing, but it stopped agitating for the kinds of social welfare, income distribution programs, and business regulation that the labor movement favored. Instead, it was converted to what academics and others call neoliberalism, that the market must rule. And this, of course, originated in the Republican Party, but when the Democratic Party in the 70s, and especially with the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980, began to lose out to this new neoliberal free market ideology, the Democratic Party was taken over by a kind of neoliberal group. Bill Clinton is the most famous example of that. He ran the Democratic Leadership Council before he became president, which said, look, we are just as pro-market, free market oriented as the Republican Party, and we're not going to any longer fight for the kind of egalitarian reforms the Democratic Party was once known for. And that's what I mean by the Democratic Party losing its soul and confining its populist instincts to the attic.
Steve, one of the things that I find so fascinating about this book is you address head on what class struggle means today and who is interested in talking about it in those terms and who's not. Because, you know, we can talk about sometimes when I'm hanging out with Democrats, I'm not a Democrat nor am I a Republican. I've got friends all over the place and enemies all over the world, whatever, people that I don't respect so much. But, you know, some people will talk about class struggle in those terms and some people won't. And yes, class struggle still exists. And so it's like Glenn Beck does talk about class struggle, but President Obama does not. So
yes,
that just fascinates me.
That's a great point. Look, the only other person who talks about class struggle famously is Warren Buffett, who said there is a class struggle and my side is winning. This is the point. You know, terms like class struggle, plutocracy, robber barons, you know, all of that language used to be common, wage slavery, all of that used to be the common lingua franca of American life 100 years ago. But then we got scared of it. And it got purged. You know, people talk about ethnic cleansing. This was a kind of linguistic cleansing. A whole vocabulary was banished from our life, like class struggle, even though the reality of class struggle continues with a vengeance today. When you have really 30 or 40 million people are the working poor. That is to say, they work for a living. They are not on welfare. They work for a living, and they still make sub-poverty wages. If that isn't exploitation, if that isn't kind of class power, tell me what is. And yet we don't use that language anymore. We're afraid. Why? It's radical, or it's communist, or it's socialist, or it's verboten. And that happened around mid-century, say, during the Cold War, when a whole set of issues you couldn't talk about anymore. I mean, even things like civil rights during the 1950s was thought of as a kind of communist conspiracy. Fortunately, African Americans organized en masse, and the civil rights revolution happened. But in many ways, we lost the capacity to imagine the world and resist the way the world was organized as our language got purged.
But the conservatives use it now. The Tea Party uses it. It's just cognitive dissonance for me.
Yeah, well, they use it in order to intimidate, in order to make people acquiesce. You're not allowed to talk about, say, gross maldistribution of income and wealth, say the conservatives, because that is to engage in class warfare. So don't do it, because we all know class warfare is a no-no. It's like it's verboten in America, and so they talk about it in order to shut it up, in order to tell people you better not use that language, otherwise you'll be considered disloyal, un-American, you know. And we live in a society in which it's easier and easier to do that, because we live in, and Obama is complicit in this, the Democrats are complicit in this, we live in a kind of a national security surveillance state in which we're afraid of everything. We live in a climate of fear, chronic fear, and this fear permeates not only the issue of terrorism and foreign policy, and but also in our domestic life.
Wait, Steve, slow down, man, slow down. Domestic life.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry.
I know you should just tell me to shut up.
I'm never going to do that. Listeners, we are live on the phone with Steve Frazier. His newest book, The Age of Acquiescence: The Life and Death of American Resistance to Organized Wealth and Power. Get that book. Justin, tell him how. Okay.
Actually, Lisa, we are having such a nice luck here that we have given away all the copies of the book. But we do have lots of other books and
subscriptions. I would give my copy.
Okay, well, it sounds to me like we've got one more copy to go when listeners call 877-500-5266. I'd like to say some thanks right now as people are making that phone call. 877-500-KBOO. On this, the first day, the inaugural episode of Lisa Loving's Democracy in Motion. I want to thank Gary, who renewed in Beaverton, and Michael,
Gary,
who renewed in Corbett. We have a nice geography here. Tatiana renewed in West Lynn. Thank you so much. Joy is a new member in Vancouver. Deborah in Portland has renewed. Thank you. And Twee is a new member in Portland. Thank you so much. Wow. And Cynthia in St. Helens has renewed. That is so lovely. And there's always room aboard the mighty 90.7 for you, dear listeners, because only about 10% of made the calls, and it's so wonderful, and you're pointing the way to everyone else. And I just wanted to mention, we've got $450 in on Lisa's work on our way to $95,000.
I don't even think my mother has called yet.
I think we've had 6 calls in. It'd be great to have another 4 phone calls before we get to the top of the hour. And I just wanted to mention, because this is such an important point, but KBOO has been talking about class struggle for all of these 47, 48 years, and we haven't all lost it, because our listeners still haven't, are still engaged in that, and that's why they're tuning in, and that's this vital resource that they don't get elsewhere, to hear people like Mr. Frazier giving this down. And you know what? What's so wonderful is that our listeners are the savviest of the bunch. This isn't news to them in the same way, but they still need that information to know they're not alone and not the only ones. And that's why you consider making a contribution to the entire community, to KBOO. And you can do that online at kboo.fm, or you can call us toll free at 877-500-KBOO. KBOO, we're standing on the shoulders of giants here, and you listeners in Radioland are the titans, and we're asking you just a little bit more. You put the price on it. You choose the value of it. But, I mean, when you listen to Lisa doing this work, and when you listen to Steve Fraser giving you this information, when you listen to all of our other people, I'm sure you can see your way clear to make a small contribution to the entire community. Do that online at KBOO.FM, or call us right now. There's no music like the ringy dingy of a telephone during membership drive. That's a toll-free number from anywhere in North America. It's 877-500-KBOO.
All right. And I just want to thank everybody that's called. I'm Lisa Loving. This show, Democracy in Motion, tamping down the cynicism, ramping up the activism. I thought about that, Steve Fraser, because in your book, you talk about how cynicism is really the prevailing attitude anymore.
Well, yeah, you know, you can't blame people for being cynical. I mean, you look at the political world, and you know it's dominated by wealth. You know that corporations speak with a far louder voice than anyone else inside the Beltway. You are a witness to an endless, unending wave of corruption stories in which business and politicians collude to you know that campaigning now is all about raising money. That's all it's about. And where are you going to raise that money except from the 1%, the big bucks? You live in a society in which poll after poll indicates that many Americans favor all kinds of reforms, say like universal health care, when health care, and even today you could take a poll and I think you'd find that, but before the Affordable Care Act was passed, people were in favor of universal health care. Just to cite one example, in many other polls, there are polls that indicate people are for income redistribution, given the inequality, and yet none of that gets acted on in Washington. So what's the point of voting or involving yourself in the political world? You can't blame people, you know, for this cynicism. Even Obama breeds a kind of cynicism because he comes into office, and he was certainly not the first to do this, with all these kinds of very fuzzy, high expectations, a lot of excitement. You don't know quite what the excitement is about, but it seems like, wow, something's going to change, and then very little does. I don't mean that he's solely responsible for that happening, but nonetheless, the political universe is one that seems to be impervious to meeting the needs of ordinary people. So, sure, cynicism reigns.
But where did Occupy come from then?
Yes, good question. My book begins with Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, there's a danger in me talking about my book that I am not aware of, or that I'm only, that it's a grim tale. And look, acquiescence is not a good thing. But of course, there have been, and Occupy Wall Street was the best example, any number of instances that suggest that acquiescence is not our fate. The opening lines of my book begin with Occupy Wall Street. It was an astounding event, and it was not only an astounding event here in America, but all over the world, in thousands of cities all over the world. At that time, people may not remember this now, there were similar occupations which targeted Wall Street and the inordinate political power it was exercising in the way it was destroying the lives of millions of people. That was great. And as the saying went, it changed the conversation. And even today, it has changed the conversation. At least now we talk about inequality, and maybe with minimum wage laws and living wage laws, we're beginning to do a little bit about it. And that's happened in part because Occupy Wall Street changed the conversation. And then, of course, there have been these other signs of restiveness, worker strikes among car wash workers and fast food workers and Walmart people. The struggling attempts to give birth to a new insurgent labor movement. And there's the environmental movement, which is maybe the best evidence against my argument that we're living in an age of acquiescence. After all, the environmental movement has been around a long time, all through this age of acquiescence. It's grown steadily without winning much at all. So that's a pretty impressive accomplishment. So there are signs, and I think there's going to be much more ahead. I don't mean to say the age of acquiescence is the terminal phase of American history. I think there are a lot of signs that that age of acquiescence may be giving way to something new.
You know what else strikes me, Steve, at this moment in history, that as we become dependent on digital media, Yahoo News, social media to get our news, we had Eli Pariser on these airwaves some few years ago because he wrote a book about the information bubble. And the point is that as we just think that if we look at our Facebook feed that it's a stream of information that people have put on there, but it's not. There's a matrix in there that shows you when you're on Facebook what you've looked at before, what you've shopped for before. And when you look at what Eli is writing about now, he's writing about how I'd like to do a social experiment specifically about Yahoo News. When I look at Yahoo News on my computer, does everybody have all these stories about young African-American men being shot, or is that just mine? Does my sisters have a lot of news about, I don't know, mental health cures, natural mental health cures and stuff like that, which is her bubble? You know what I'm saying? I don't even know when we tune into the news if we're all hearing or seeing the same thing. Well, and one of the things that Eli talks about is we're being separated by our ideas.
Yes, and all of that, I mean, the algorithms that govern these large,
platforms, media outlets,
these platforms are actually incredibly narrow because it's all about commerce.
They're trying to sell you something, yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to sell you something, so they don't care. They're almost apolitical, but you're getting a very thin slice of information, and this both segregates the world, fragments it, so that we're not actually engaged in a commons, in a kind of conversational commons. And that's what's so insidious about this, because the information superhighway was supposed to democratize
the great equalizer.
Knowledge. But it actually has often done exactly the opposite. Just like Wall Street, you may be too young to remember this. I don't know how old you are, but you know, in the '90s, there was all this kind of hoopla about how information technology was opening up what had been a very secretive place, Wall Street, to everybody, and you could be just as knowledgeable as the guy at Goldman Sachs when it came to buying and selling stocks, and day traders went online, and so on. But this, of course, turned out to be utter nonsense.
So, Steve, wait, hold that thought. I want to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes about what has happened with capitalism itself since that first Gilded Age. But I really want to jump over to my friend Justin. Justin, how much are the hoodies? Are they $240?
Yeah, they're $240.
Buy a hoodie, people.
People could start a $20 a month contribution
for the hoodie.
And that sounds like a lot of money, but that $20, you're looking at that. Well, that's about $5 a week. It's less than a dollar a day, and a lot of people are doing just that. The books are all gone, so let's be clear about that. But I'm happy to say we've had 8 calls, and I'm thinking we got time to get 2 more calls in here for a nice round 10 calls. And I also wanted to mention, look at how radio is still making powerful inroads here. Sometimes, that old school technology, because here's a commons right here, and we know it because people like Dunning are calling in from Lake Oswego and renewing their membership, and people like Bartley are calling from West Lynn and renewing their membership. They did that by dialing that toll-free number, 877-500-5266, and we decided we're going to shoot for $1,000 right now for this hour towards our $95,000 goal, because we're about halfway there. We've got $720 in. Let's have several more calls and have people come in and just take us over the top there even further. We're at 950 right now. We've got 10 minutes, and we have some lines open, so won't you please call right now, 877-500-5266. If someone could take that KBOO hoodie, you can see that online at KBOO.fm. That would get us pretty close right there. But many hands make light lifting too, and so maybe some people could do some $40 a year. That's what we call a basic membership. Mm-hmm. You could do a $60, or maybe you could give a gift for someone else
gift
and
membership.
Do $120.
Used to give gift memberships to people like the president. He's already got one. Did you know that the president of the United States of America already has a gift membership to give?
I'm hoping that he flashed his card at Nike this morning, because that seems right, especially here in the city that works from home, right? 877-500-5266 from the city that encouraged you to phone it in. That's right. Why don't you phone it in right now to KBOO at 877-500-5266. You know, we're looking for those numbers of calls because we're less interested. I mean, of course, we like the money, the bills like everybody else. They're your bills, community. But what we really, really are interested in is having more people get involved and some people renewing the memberships, but also always adding some new listener members, some new supporters, because, you know, there are many of you who are listening right now. Hell, I don't know how many new people come into town every day, but it sure feels like
tens
a lot. And people ought to be tuning into KBOO right and left. And so for those of you who just arrived, we're going to withhold our judgment at this moment and welcome you aboard the mighty 90.7. When you call 877-500-KBOO, you picked a lucky day to arrive because you have Lisa Loving in the captain's chair right now with Steve Fraser, and we're laying down some real information here about the age of acquiescence, which you know a lot about, listeners, because you listen to KBOO as the antidote, and we're asking you to get involved. Lisa is doing this as a labor of love. She takes time out of her busy day. She's been doing this for a long time. That doesn't make her old. It makes her experienced. It makes her wise. It makes her seasoned. And she's your advocate, dear listeners. She is tirelessly digging up this information that you're not supposed to know. How many people serve as that kind of advocate for you? Here, there are hundreds. We have trained thousands to become your advocates. And we're asking you now to just put a small price on that. Pennies a day, dimes a day, maybe even dollars a day. You can do that online at kboo.fm, or you can call us 877-500-KBOO. Lisa, I feel like I'm hogging a little bit here when your sweet dulcet tones are obviously what makes the difference.
Sweet dulcet tones. No, I'm kidding. I really like to recommend that people contribute 1 hour's wage per month to this august radio station. It's a queenly gift. It really is. Even if you make minimum wage, which, again, here in the Pacific Northwest, politically, we're so libertarian, we're so conservative, we're coming back around on the left-hand side sometimes. But we have agitated for a higher minimum wage and really want to encourage people to give 1 hour's wage per month. 877-500-5266, or just whatever's in your wallet. Come in person. We love it when people walk in here. 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon.
You know, you reminded me, Lisa, another way to think about it, because, of course, the amount isn't as important as hearing those phones ring and getting people involved. We're just trying to give ideas to sort of maybe bounce around what it's worth to you, because I know it's worth something. You're listening. You might pay for 1 hour a year of KBOO. That's $88. Can you imagine that all of this work has been done? These thousands of volunteers have been trained. These 23 million commercial-free minutes have happened for about $2,100 a day.
We are such a cheap date.
$2,100. It's actually, the number I'm looking at right now is $2,112. So it's a palindromic number, and that amounts to $88 an hour. So I heard another phone ring there. Let's go over 10 calls, and I know we're gonna I'm gonna get out of the way because I want to hear more of your talk with Steve right here. But you know, there's still time for a few more of you to have her double her goal. Lisa wants to double her goal for the inaugural episode of Democracy in Motion, and many hands make light lifting. So why don't you call us right now at toll-free anywhere in North America to say thank you to Lisa and everyone who's involved in this community. You can do that at 877-500-5266.
Thanks, Justin. You are my brother. You know, KBOO is my family, and if you met my bio family, you would realize that I got a wild family, and I really recommend that people get books like this, or people tune into KBOO.fm, go to the website, and all these things are podcast. I share those with my family over the years. Like I said, 25 years here at KBOO. I spent half my life here, and that's why so many people in my family eat wheat bread. I swear to God, they eat wheat bread. Those that still eat bread, I'm saying. Steve Fraser, this is wild. This has been a fabulous show. We've got about 5 minutes left or so. Steve, so this is the membership. We're talking about the activism of a community radio station. You're talking about, like, you're sort of laying the groundwork with Age of Acquiescence. You're giving the deeper history where we have been in the past. You don't jump into what people are doing now so much. I mean, those books have been written already. But if you had a big magic Juan Steve Frazier, and you could decide where the next big Occupy movement would pop up or what the next big issue or big activity should be, what would you wave your wand over and ask for?
Well, I think it's already on the agenda, and I'm glad about that. I think it's the question of inequality in America. I think that's fundamental to what the country is supposed to be about or not supposed to be about, and that we need to address this question right where it arises. That is to say, at the workplace, at the site of exploitation, at the site of working class poverty, at the site of thwarted lives in the millions. That is the consequence of living in a society so dominated by the 1%. And I think that the site, it needs to be in our communities and at our workplaces. It needs to be inspired by the kind of mass activism and organizing in the streets, if you will, that was once familiar to our ancestors 100 years ago, and needs to be, and I think will be today, because the issue clearly has caught the imagination, thanks to Occupy Wall Street, thanks to the efforts of all kinds of local activists around the country, thanks to the bravery, you know, of a lot of immigrant workers. I mean, part of the reason we're so acquiescent is people are afraid. You forget about the politics of fear, the sheer politics of fear. You're an immigrant worker, and you're barely getting by, and God forbid you're undocumented. Are you going to raise your voice? Are you going to call out your employer who you know is violating every wage and hour law that's on the books? No, you're probably not, because you're worried about your family. And yet, people finally do. You know, one of the great mysteries of our country's history, of history generally, is why do people take it on the chin for so long and put up with intolerable conditions? That's mysterious. But the other mystery is, why do they ever fight back? Because it's so scary. But actually, we're beginning to see that. And the immigrant population in our country is beginning to flex its muscles and demand its rights. So I think the combination of immigrant, the immigration question and the question of poverty and exploitation at work will be the site of a kind of new resistance in America.
You know what else, Steve? I work at an African-American family-owned newspaper. When I saw that African-American people were marching in the street, that's a watershed, because now you're talking about people who literally risk their lives just walking. In our town, people who are black literally risk their lives walking down the street.
Yeah,
we've seen that
before.
They're
guilty of walking in the street
being black. The critical mass of getting African-American people marching in the street, and now that's happened quite a few times between now and last year. That's revolutionary in itself.
Yes, it is. And especially if all these different movements of immigrants, African Americans, impoverished workers, exploited workers can combine, then you have a mighty force which can do what once was done, that is to civilize a society that's become increasingly barbaric.
Steve Frazier, we went over our goal. We more than doubled our goal for the
so
membership drive of the show. Somebody got the hoodie. I love you, man. And Steve Frazier, The Life and Death of American Resistance to Organized Wealth and Power, The Age of Acquiescence. Love the book, Steve. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Come and visit. All right.
Bye.
And we're going to stop there. This is Democracy in Motion, tamping down the cynicism, ramping up the activism, huh? Look for this show podcast on KBOO.FM, and we'll see you the second Friday of every month. I'm Lisa Loving. Stay tuned. You rock! Woo!
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Hoda Middle Eastern Cuisine, located at 3401 Southeast Belmont, serving Lebanese cuisine using ingredients from local farms. Dinner was provided by De Nicolas's Italian Restaurant, located at 3520 Southeast Powell, family-owned and serving Italian cuisine.